Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can respond to your leads in 15 seconds or less and help you book test drives 24/7, nights and weekends, so you can sell more cars. Podium's AI BDC is a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night and sounds like your best sales rep. Transform potential interest into sales today with Podium. Visit podium.com/daily drive. That's podium.com/daily drive.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/daily drive promo to redeem.
Welcome to Daily Drive for Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. I'm Jake Neer in Detroit, in for Jamie Butters, who's on assignment.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, after a two-month delay, Ford dealers will start getting F-150 Lightnings again. Honda's first in-house EV starts production next year. And Stellantis investors are not thrilled about last year's compensation for CEO Carlos Tavares. Plus, the conclusion of our exclusive interview with UAW President Sean Fain.
I've lived. I've been on unemployment. I've been on government aid to get formula diapers for my firstborn child. I don't forget those things. I don't want working class people to have to struggle like I did.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Ford says it's once again sending 2024 F-150 Lightning pickups to dealerships. A quality issue halted shipments for more than 9 weeks. Ford issued a stop ship order for the top-selling electric pickup on February 9th, shortly after the 2024 model started going out to stores in January. Gasoline and hybrid 2024 F-150s also have been held back in parking lots in the Detroit area in recent months. Ford says those trucks began shipping the week of February 19th. Ford has not given details about the quality issue that caused the delay. It's the latest in a string of quality woes for the automaker that has led the industry in recalls for 3 consecutive years. It also comes as Ford cuts 2/3 of the jobs at the Lightning plant and dials back planned production of the electric pickup by half.
Honda's $4.4 billion electric vehicle and battery hub in Ohio is on track to begin vehicle and battery assembly in 2025. The Japanese automaker is spending $700 million to retool 3 plants to produce EVs and EV components. It's also building a battery factory from the ground up as part of a $3.5 billion joint venture with LG Energy Solution. At a time when some automakers are slowing their EV development programs, Honda has several EV projects underway. Company officials say Honda will lean on profits from gasoline and hybrid vehicle sales to channel funds back into developing EVs and other technologies. They say 2025 is the year when Honda will kick its EV effort into high gear.
General Motors' plan to move its global headquarters reflects a big shift in its post-pandemic office space needs. There have been reports for years that GM has long been seeking a new location for its headquarters, which has been in Detroit's Renaissance Center since 1996. In 2025, GM will shrink its presence in downtown Detroit by moving its headquarters out of the Renaissance Center towers and exploring options to redevelop the riverfront office complex, which the company can no longer fill in an era of remote work. During Monday's press conference announcing the move, GM CEO Mary Barra says it reflects a continued commitment to the city of Detroit.
We'll be the signature tenant of this state-of-the-art building. We'll have space to display our vehicles and host events with all the modern amenities you'll imagine from a developer like Bedrock. It will be our corporate headquarters, our nerve center, and a collaborative space for our employees.
GM is moving into the 1.5 million square foot Hudson's Detroit development just a mile away from its current headquarters. The new building includes about 400,000 square feet of office space. GM says it has entered into a 15-year lease for the top office floors of the building and will occupy street-level space to feature GM vehicles and community events.
And Stellantis CEO Carlos Tavares's jump in 2023 compensation is getting some heavy pushback. That's as the Jeep maker pursues deep job cuts and tough savings goals in the EV transition. At Tuesday's annual general meeting, advisory firms Glass Lewis and Prox Invest are urging investors to vote against approving the $39 million total compensation package, which is up almost 60% from 2022 levels. The package includes a new incentive award worth 10 million euros, tied to meeting electrification and software goals. 2 years ago, investors rejected Tavares's pay plan in a non-binding vote after opposition in France. The manufacturer has come under intense scrutiny in Italy as it seeks to reduce headcount and shift EV production to lower-cost countries such as Morocco. And those are today's headlines. Coming up, the conclusion of our exclusive interview with UAW President Sean Fain. That's next on Daily Drive.
Fast response times can help you beat the dealer down the street. Get a tool that can help you respond to all your leads in 15 seconds or less, 24/7, nights and weekends. Check out Podium's AI BDC, a conversational AI employee who sells, schedules, and talks with customers day and night with human-like communication. Your response time to leads is crucial. With your new AI BDC, you'll engage with leads fast, increasing the chance of selling a car to 45%. Customize your AI BDC to what your dealership needs and start booking more test drives. Sell 10 to 15 more cars per month by connecting quickly with leads over text. Visit podium.com/daily drive. Again, that is podium.com/daily drive.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jake Neer with Kellen Walker. Yesterday on the show, we heard the first part of UAW President Sean Fain's exclusive interview with Automotive News staff reporter Michael Martinez. They talked about this week's unionization vote at Volkswagen's Chattanooga, Tennessee plant and what the outcome of that election will mean for the UAW and the American labor movement. Today, we'll hear more about that, as well as Fain's broader goals after last year's historic contract wins with the Detroit 3.
I'm wondering, in the organizing drive, a lot of these southern transplant automakers have supplier parks right at or right near the plants. Do you expect to go for those suppliers next? Do you think that will have an impact if you're able to unionize?
Well, I think it'll have an impact. And I mean, look, this is all up to the workers. I mean, workers have to decide if they want a better life for themselves or if they're happy with the status quo. I mean, if workers are happy living paycheck to paycheck and scraping to get by and the boss having all the control, then, you know, we can't make them. And we're not going to make people join the union. We want people to join because they want to be a part of this and they want a better life for themselves. And, you know, and that's the ironic part of some of what we read about in the arguments from the other side, from the corporate side. You know, they talk about the unions threatening or intimidating people to join. We don't threaten anybody. As we just said, I mean, workers reached out to us. They want to join. The people that threaten people are the companies. You know, they have captive audience meetings and they threaten workers and tell them they're going to lose their job or they fire them or they threaten to close a plant, whatever it is. I mean, I always find a twisted irony in that when they say one thing in the media, but when you look at reality, Mercedes fired a couple workers recently. Why? Because they want to be a union? I mean, that's it. I mean, so, you know, they're the bullies. And so I believe it's up to the workers. And I believe workers are realizing that more and more now that this is their path to a better life.
I'm wondering if you could make that case for us. Some of these places, I think Toyota, Georgetown in particular, I don't think they've laid anybody off even during the recession. If you're a worker there and you've seen that and you've seen, you know, they did get a substantial raise after the UAW bump, as you call it, mm-hmm. Why would you make the case for them to join the union? What would their dues if they join be getting them?
It's interesting. Well, their dues, first off, get them a contract where Toyota can't give you a 11% pay raise 1 week and take it away the next. It gives you control. You know, gives you a contract, which you have say in your work life. But the irony of that is when Toyotas of the world brag about they didn't lay anyone off in the recession, what they don't talk about is 40% of their workforce is temp workers. They don't count those temp workers when they cut them as layoffs. And, of course, that's never reported. So, you know, we need to be real when we talk about these situations in the transplants in the South, is most of them carry 40% plus temp workforces. So when Toyota bragged about not laying a worker off in the recession, they cut temps. They just didn't lay off their full-time people. And it's ironic to me, again, the UAW was villainized for having what they called a jobs bank, where you don't lay people off, you let them do community works initiatives. But Toyota was hailed during the recession. While we were being raked over the coals for having this jobs bank, Toyota was hailed as heroes because they didn't lay their workers off, their full-time people, and they kept them working doing community projects. They were looked at as the greatest company in the world for that. So, you know, we have to be real and talk about facts and these things and look at it with the same in the same lens, because there's one lens for us and there's another lens for somebody else in that situation.
Sure.
And it's the same thing.
I'm wondering, Stephen Sylvia wrote a book on organizing, UAW Southern Gamble. Talked with him recently, and he said from his perspective, it looked like over the course of various campaigns, the union, the UAW did try to innovate. They did try different tactics, but it still ultimately resulted in failure way more often than not, with a few exceptions. What gives you this confidence that now is different?
I just think it's a different, like I said, I go back to this, it's a difference in leadership, difference in philosophies, difference in strategies. People see the UAW now as what it should be, a fighting, thriving union that's member-driven and that's going to look out for the best interest of the members, not look out for the best interest of the leadership at the top. And that's what it's been. I've said this for decades in this union. When you bargain substandard agreements and you see workers go backwards, you know, when you bargain tiers and things like that, when you give things back in the best of times, when bad times hit, we end up, the companies take all they can take. And, you know, in the best of times, we should be fighting for our workers, getting the best we can get. When you set the example, when you set the standard, people want to be a part of that. My grandparents, all four of my grandparents left the South, you know, after the Depression. They were destitute. They were poor. They wanted a better life. When they got jobs at GM and Chrysler, it changed their lives because there were standard setting, the top, you know, top wages, benefits, and all that. They lived the American dream. And that dream's been dead for the past 40 years in this country. And I believe it's a direct correlation with we've seen unions decline those over those same 40 years. And we've seen this massive wealth inequality, the gap between rich and poor continue to grow. And when you have three families in America that have as much wealth as the bottom 50%, we got a big problem here. And so I do believe people are fed up with being left behind in the best of times. Our work generates those massive profits for these companies, and workers need to be treated better for that.
You've touched on this in some of your speeches, but what would be the advantage? What would be good for you if you're able to secure some organizing victories in your bargaining, in your relationships with the Detroit automakers? What would that do for you?
It makes it more of an even playing field. I mean, number one, I mean, you know, there's always the threat. There's always, you know, I always, again, found this fallacy in our past leadership. I mean, they would come to us with the excuse that, well, we've got to do this because the transplants only pay this much, the transplants only do that. Well, my philosophy has always been, screw that. We set the standard. They're going to come up to our level, because if they don't, workers are going to want to be a part of that. And you're seeing that now. You know, we bargained a record contract, best contract in our history, and other workers saw that and they want to be a part of that. And so what did Toyota and what did all these companies do? Right away, Toyota, within 2 weeks of our ratification, you know, gave workers a pay raise. Then Honda followed, then Nissan, then, you know, they just, Volkswagen, Mercedes. They did that for one reason. That's why we're going to claim this. They're doing it because of what we bargained for, because they're scared to death that those workers are going to realize that they can have a better life if they join a union. So that's why I said we call it the UAW bump. You are welcome. And when they join the UAW, they're going to recognize even better gains and better benefits.
I think in some of the past organizing drives, especially with VW, it was said that international cooperation between some of the unions overseas was a benefit, and the union recognized that. I'm curious, either with VW or even with any of the other automakers, have there been conversations behind the scenes, in front of the scenes?
Yes.
How has that international cooperation
been? We've been talking with Iggy Mittal, with specifically to Volkswagen and Mercedes, about the violations that the companies are. I mean, they're breaking their own code. They're breaking they're violating their laws of who they are as a corporation in Germany. And Iggy Mittal is pushing that in Germany. We communicate between the unions. So we communicate with workers and with unions in Mexico. Had a delegation from there here this last week and met with them. And we have to lift the standard everywhere. And, you know, we have to stand up, you know, for our union family in Mexico, Brazil, anywhere that there are workers. We need to stand together. And we're fighting global corporations. They've done it years ago. And, you know, they've pooled their resources and they fight us globally. We have to stand together as working class globally. This isn't just an American problem. It's a global problem. Workers everywhere are fed up. And we saw that, again, in our Big Three fight. We had workers from all over the world, unions from all over the world, that came and stood on the picket lines with our workers that wanted to be a part of it. And, you know, they're taking a lot of what we've done. They're applying it. And we're talking. And, you know, we're planning for May of 28. Hopefully we'll see bigger plans and even a bigger plan fold out with working class people globally.
VW has been an interesting case with the past elections because it seems management's stance has swung. 2014, I think they let organizers in the plant, gave them space. 2019 seemed to be more hostile mm-hmm. towards the election. You've touched on this already, but what do you see from VW right now? And do you expect it? I think Governor Lee talked to workers the last time. Have you heard from him? Have you heard from his office? What will be the political angle?
I haven't heard from him or his office, but I mean, anyone in politics, I don't care what their party politics are. I mean, when you go in there and you tell workers, you know, not to do this, it's going to be bad for you. I mean, that person's not paying your bills. You know, that person's not, you know, Governor Lee's not scraping to get by living paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, neither is, you know, Governor Ivey in Alabama or anywhere else. And they're serving their corporate interest. They're serving the people that are paying their, you know, paying for their elections, paying for their campaigns. And they don't give a damn about working class people. If they did, they'd be on our side. They'd be on the side of those workers. So anyone that walks in there and tells workers this isn't good for you is not looking out for the interests of those workers. And, you know, I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. That's up to them. They got to live with that. They got to look themselves in the mirror at night and know that they're crapping on working class people. And eventually, you know, people will wise up to that. And I think people are wising up to that. And there'll be repercussions for that in the future when they run for office, I believe.
Where will the next election take place after VW?
We'll see. We're making a lot of progress several places, and you know, when the time's right, we'll make that announcement. But I don't want to tip the hand or tip our hat, you know, to prepare any other companies to be ready for that. But we've got several very strong possibilities, and the list keeps growing. So I'm looking forward. Like I said, I think once we win at Volkswagen, April 19th, I believe you're going to see a lot more follow. In a quick way.
I did want to ask, your chief of staff, Chris, wrote for Labor Notes back in 2019 after the VW election, a pretty detailed postmortem about why he felt the UAW lost. Has he helped give input in terms of the organizing strategy, and how much of what he has said have you relied on or tried to take into account?
No, I mean, I've brought in, like I said, Brian Shepard. Chris Brooks is one of my top administrative assistants. You know, it's been a whole group of us. I mean, there are people, Chuck Browning, that was here. He worked on the Volkswagen campaign as a top assistant to the president, you know, years ago. And, you know, it's a team of us, our communications team. It's really all of us coming together, looking at what didn't work, where we've been as a union, where we believe we should be, and the current situation. I mean, you know, there's a lot of new employees that are there that weren't there in those drives. So, you know, there's some that were there. There's a lot that weren't. So there's a lot of different factors into this. But yeah, Chris has been an integral part in our strategies and everything we've done with Big Three bargaining, with organizing, and all that. And I tell people this. I mean, because it's kind of ironic. People will say, "Oh, Chris wrote something, and it wasn't, you know, it was negative toward the UAW." But I've wrote things negative about the UAW as a member, as a shop chairman. I was anti-ratification in 2007 when they implemented tiers. I mean, so. That's what a union is. If this has been the problem with this union for decades, is what the expectation has been when the president speaks or a vice president speaks, we're just supposed to jump in line and bob our heads and follow. That's not a union, and that's not a democracy. That's an authoritarian form of government, and we do not believe in that. And so any time I talk to people and my staff, I encourage, look, I don't expect to say something, everyone just nod their heads. If you're all agreeing with me, then we got a problem in this room. The same thing with the membership. There are members that are, even with our greatest contract in our history, there are members that are critical of what we've done. I mean, that's a democracy, and that's what a union should be. I'm not mad at those members. I'm listening. And, you know, if maybe we missed something, maybe I was wrong on something. I don't know if I was. We're going to fix it. But we're going to listen to members. We're going to listen to all those points of view, and we're going to move forward. So Chris Brooks has brought invaluable insight into everything we've been doing, and I'd stand behind that any day of the week.
How much do you view this organizing drive as part of your legacy as president? Or is there any concern that if you fail, you know, the next election coming up in a couple of years, right, if that would impact
I don't things? Look, man, we got a job to do, and I'm focused on the job, and I could care less about legacy. I'm not doing this because I want a legacy. I'm not doing this because I want to be somebody. I'm doing this for one reason. I'm a fed up worker. I've been in this fight for 30 years, actually longer. I was an IBEW member before I was a UAW member, and I've lived. I've been on unemployment. I've been on government aid to get formula diapers for my firstborn child. I don't forget those things. And I don't want working class people to have to struggle like I did. I've scraped to get by paycheck to paycheck. I know what it's like. And I don't want people to have that life. I want better for people. And so I'm going to do the best I can do, fight like hell. Elections and those things take care of themselves. Look, we have a democratically elected union now in our top leadership. It's direct elections. If the membership wants me to have a second term, that's up to them. I mean, I'm going to run again. I have every intention of doing that. And, you know, but that's up to the membership. And legacies and things like that, I'll worry about that, you know, when I'm done. And that's the focus, though, is winning for working class people and changing their lives, not just in America, but in the world.
One quick last one, if I could. Anything in particular surprised you during this organizing drive, this campaign? Anything you've learned, been surprised by?
Not really surprised. I mean, I think we knew where working class people are just from our fight and the big three and just seeing the support we've got everywhere. You know, I think to me, the most gratifying thing I've just seen throughout the whole process in my first year is just, you know, I was sworn in on March 26th on a Sunday, and on Monday I was running a bargaining convention for the UAW, and it was a very divided house. You know, people were just accepting the reality that who won and who didn't win. And you know, I think our contract campaign and through that fight, it really brought the membership together and brought the leadership together. And so I say this confidently that our union is more unified than it's been in my 30 years. And I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud to see the public, not just in America, but globally, is standing with us now. I wouldn't have seen this happening this quick. I thought it would take a long, long time to really get some of the things that have happened and the momentum we've got to happen. But I'd say that maybe if you call it a surprise, I guess that's the pleasant surprise in all of it.
Sean, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Good to talk to you.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jake Neer, in for Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to automotive news journalists Michael Martinez, Carly Schaffner, and Lindsay Van Hulley for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on UAW organizing efforts, manufacturing, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow. We'll hear from Volkswagen workers in Chattanooga about how they're feeling about this week's unionization vote.
During this go-round, the Big Three campaign had a lot to do with it. Watching the big contracts come through, it opened a lot of people's eyes as far as what could be possible here at Volkswagen.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.